Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Ray Borales and Rich Bergeron, and working on connecting with Tony Pacquiao here. And tonight on the show, we have Matt Manzanares. He's a 5-0 MMA fighter. And one time we have Lyle Beerbaum on at the 9:15 slot. And we got some bad boxing news this week, Tony.
A lot of bad boxing news this week.
Yeah. I guess we could start with Johnny Tapia.
Yeah.
What is he, 45?
45 years old, absolutely, yeah. You know, I mean, well, what can you say? I mean, the guy had almost more than 9 lives. He literally declared dead on, I don't know, 4 occasions.
And then we had Paul Williams get paralyzed in a motorcycle accident. I'm sure you heard about that.
Yep. With Canelo Alvarez would have been a very good fight, and you know, we're not gonna get that off. Looks like, I mean, a very interesting you know, substitute is now, it looks like it's gonna be Canelo Alvarez and James Kirkland. It's gonna be a very good fight, but. So, I mean, one thing I was thinking about earlier, I mean, it's like the Paul Williams had maybe broke his hands in training, and Kirkland stepped in. That would have been okay. But unfortunately, you may be dealing with a man that is now paralyzed and will likely be paralyzed for the rest of his life. I was careful with the motorcycles, man. You know, we lost Salvador. I don't think Salvador Sanchez would have been a Lamborghini or something. But he's, you know, driving fast. Philadelphia. The kid out of Philadelphia, James Short. It was 2 weeks after he lost Tommy Hearns back in the mid-80s. He died in a motorcycle accident. And,
All right, Diego Corrales, did he die in a motorcycle accident? It's a history of that. You know, you guys shouldn't be doing that, boxers. It's bad enough. You know, you could die in the ring. You don't have to, you know, take risks outside it like that. I guess he was driving a little too fast. Supposedly, he's been very uplifting about the whole thing. He's convinced he's going to walk again and all that and get back to boxing, but doesn't look good. I guess he just had surgery today, but you know, once you screw up your spinal cords like that, it's pretty hard to come back from. We'll see.
Well, I mean, surgery is definitely with him. I mean, we'll certainly see, but to be honest, it does not look good.
And then there was some news I didn't cover last week. The UFC fighter, the light heavyweight champion there, got busted for DWI May 19th. I think it was early in the morning. Yeah, the day I went to Battle of the Badges. The day I was driving sober. No, I wasn't driving. Down in Binghamton, New York. And it came out just the other day. Loretta Hunt, of course, got the scoop, did some digging, and she found out that John Jones had 2 passengers in the car with him when he hit the telephone pole. And I did hear an interview with Dana White saying that, oh, we sat down with him and talked to him, and, you know, he talked about how, you know, everybody thinks, you know, getting in the spotlight is a good thing, but it can be a bad thing for some people. So, but supposedly they also, Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta met with Roy Nelson. This is another story I read this week. And I know he's one of your favorite MMA fighters. They might hate to admit it. But Roy Nelson apparently was getting yelled at for not taking his career seriously enough because they think, you know, he ought to lose some weight and cut his hair, whatever. You know, they don't like his appearance, yada, yada, yada. He doesn't have a manager. He manages himself. So I think they just don't like that about him. And so he won his fight the other night at UFC 146 there and just demolished and switched his opponent. They switched his opponent on him like four times, and he finally ended up fighting Dave Herman. Pee-wee, they call him. And knocked him right the fuck out with one punch. And he's actually been working with Jeff Mayweather. So apparently he's really stepped up his boxing. And he jumped up on the ring top of the cage fence and gave like a fuck you to Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta. Like, take that. You know, you can't fire me on a win. So that was kind of funny. But anyway, yeah. So he had two people in the car. Then there was news the other day that Ariel Helwani. No, not Ariel Helwani. What is it? Ariane Celeste. the ring girl got busted for a domestic violence dispute with her boyfriend in a Vegas hotel. And they had to bail her out to get her ready for the show the other night. And they didn't even, like, say anything bad about that. They just said, oh, well, you know, should we have her back on that? But it'd be kind of interesting. If that was a male fighter and he was involved in domestic violence things, his wife, you know, you'd think they'd just throw him out. They've done it before, I think, with Strikeforce has anyway, with Brett Rogers. I know that was kind of a bad case. But whatever, his wife forgave him, they're back together. And I know, it's kind of along the same lines of the theme that I wrote a story about this week on Bleacher Report. You know, the way they treated Nick Diaz over his marijuana deal. Suspended him for a year, and they're not doing anything in these cases where these people actually broke the law and got arrested for it. You know, he's never going to get arrested for testing positive for marijuana metabolites. But these people are breaking the law in the UFC and getting away with it without, you know, any kind of suspension or anything like the NFL would have done to a player for getting arrested in a heartbeat. And Dana's always saying he wants to be like the NFL, so go figure. Then also, another news from UFC 146, Jason Mayhem Miller just decided to retire after losing to Cameron Dollar. And it's kind of funny because I actually watched the show on Spike TV. They have this MMA Uncensored show. And Mayhem Miller came on to talk about his fight with C.B. Dalloway, and he said, if I lose to C.B. Dalloway, I'll retire, you know, because he didn't think he would lose. And it was actually a pretty controversial split decision. Supposedly there was some kind of ruckus or incident backstage with Miller, and Dana White threw him out anyway with the UFC, so he really didn't have much of a choice, I guess, to retire. And he says he feels like a weight is lifted. Every fighter gives the same answer when they say they're retired. Pretty much every fighter says, I'm retired until I need money. I'm a pretty smart dude. I have other avenues open to me. And he was famous for his Ultimate Fighter 14 appearance there with Michael Bisping as a coach. When they brought him back to the UFC. And he's also been on MTV's Bully Beatdown. But basically, Dalloway robbed Miller of the chance to win with wrestling. And White just announced really right at the press conference after the fight that he was out of the UFC. I still haven't heard what this post-fight incident was. I'm just kind of curious. You'd think it would get out. But everybody just keeps calling it an incident. What do we got going on in boxing this weekend?
Well, there's a good fight card in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania tomorrow night. I was thinking about them. Unfortunately, I've been under the weather for the majority of the week, and I don't see myself making. I was going to the fight card. It's going to be on NBC Sports. And then I was going to go to the baseball game on Saturday. And I'm still going to the baseball game only because of the tickets. So, I have them, and I really can't say them in. So I'm trying to check it up and think of that and try the best time I can. But the first card, I never did get tickets, and it's kind of a good thing because right now I just, don't really feel up to it. And that's too much for the detail. I can probably hurry up. Let the code.
Alright.
But the first card tomorrow night, thanks to Tom Cruise, he's got a couple hundred years and a few homecoming for him. But the co-feature is the one that, once again, could potentially be on the show. Just like the card a few months ago when Gabby Rosado sold Joe against Hayes Jojo Taras. He once again had to see the show. He was going up against the fighter, Steve Howe, who was a big fight out there. He had to fight with about 28-29 bunches that they went 1-1 against each other. But their first fight was interesting. They scored a double knockdown the first punch of the fight, so it's not slow down. And then Powell got up and blasted Bondrick, and the fight was over in 20 seconds. Then in the rematch, Bondrick won by decision. So it's a cute battle, very good fighter. He has some quality wins out there. Tom Franklin is going to be a good fight for Gabriel Rosado. It'll be an interesting card. Had a very good fight card on Epic last week with Misha Bisa and Carl Frosch. I was wrong. The rain in the boxing picked one wrong. I saw Bisa just being faster, more agile, better boxer, utilizing his skills to win by decision. I was talking to Iceman John Skelly and a few other boxing scribes. And most of us were leaning towards UK. A few of them even thought it would be relatively one-sided and maybe a mid-round stoppage. Well, it was relatively one-sided and was a mid-round stoppage, just the other fighter. Brock did a very good job. He was really able to cut him off and apply pressure early. The thing he did in the first round, which I thought was really smart, was a couple times when they got in close, UK was using, obviously his better boxing skills, and they got in close, and Frost just, punched him, three or four times.
Now,
okay, back to the UK. One of the things that Frost did in the first round, while UK was, hitting him with shots, scoring at will, and UK was controlling the first round, the one time they got into a clinch, Frost just threw a couple hard shots. He went in a clinch, and he just caught UK with a couple hard shots on the side of the head. And I said, you know what? I just thought to myself when that happened, I said, that's a pretty good goddamn idea. I said, because if you're fighting a guy that you're going to have a little bit harder of a time with and he's a little bit better of a boxer, you want to hit him whenever you can. And that's what he did. And then the second round, he caught him with a couple of shots. It's like, oh, shit, he stunned him a little bit. And then from there, it was like the beating was on. He stunned him in the second. He stunned him in the third. And then Frotcher, Bipe had taken control, was winning the fourth round. And then Frotch, got him up against the ropes and hit him a hard combination a few seconds before the bell and really had him hurt. You saw Bipe walking back, and he was staggering pretty bad. And it's like, shit, he is hurt. He's hurt pretty bad.
And then he just kept the pressure on the fifth round. He sort of, bombed him. He got him against the ropes, and, he hurt him pretty bad. And then the one potential point of controversy which thankfully didn't, you know, result in anything negative happening, was Peraza beat him on the ropes and hit him with a pretty hard combination. And it looked like, you know, the referee, the way he jumped in, it looked like he was stopping the fight. When in essence, he was going to call a count because the ropes are the only thing holding Dupay up. So when he did that, Dupay's Frost's tornado literally ran into the ring. And, you know, it could have ended up winning the disqualification. Thankfully, it did not. And then Dupay's corner stopped it right there. But it was a very impressive win for Frotch. Hey, the Rain Man picked one wrong. What can I say?
And Eric the Eagle Ochin won on the undercard. Retained his English light middleweight title. Let's see what else we got coming up. Well, we had a death in boxing, of course. We talked about Johnny Tapia. We also had a death in MMA. It was kind of a freakish accident type of thing. I guess the guy must have, I mean, they haven't done an autopsy yet, but had an event called Ring Wars on May 18th. A Sturgis man died 1 week after competing in this MMA competition there. Dustin Jensen is his name. He's 26 years old. And he tapped out in the fight, so it wasn't a knockout. And according to his mother-in-law, it wasn't a very violent performance or anything. But anyway, she said that they watched the next two fights before going to the locker room, and then he suffered a seizure. He laid down to do stretches, and then another fighter heard a moan. He went over and saw him having a seizure. They called the EMT and took him to the hospital. And then they said he had pressure on his brain and put him in a medically induced coma before surgery was performed to relieve the pressure. And he was declared dead May 24th, taken off life support the next day. And he basically didn't wake up from the surgery. And
you know, whether you're a pro, whether you're an amateur, whether you're a champion, a contender, or, you know, just a four-round fighter, an MMA, a three-round fighter.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you, you know, that it's a violent sport in some ways, and, you know, it can be your last fight if you take a hit the wrong way. It's one of those sports that's different from any other. You know, you don't hear of many deaths in football. maybe long after the fact that, you know, your career is over and something happens with your brain, but it's rare that a death happens against a competition. And, you know, MMA is still a young sport. I've always said it. You know, we will see more deaths. You know, it's just bound to happen. But this one was more of a just a freakish aneurysm, I think, that you had or something. And everybody was saying that it just wasn't that bad of a fight, but, you know, it is combat sports. They don't call it that for nothing. And, you know, we wish his family well. He was a father and a husband, so, you know, it's just too bad to hear about something like that. And it always reminds me, you know, you got to pay these guys better because they're risking their lives out there. And, you know, you get a story like that, it kind of really brings it home. Anyway, we have Matt Manzanares. I'm saying that right, probably not. It's a tough one. Coming on at 8:30, he's an MMA guy. Sure, Doug shows him at 3-0, but what I got from his manager says 5-0. He last fought at the Extreme Gladiator Challenge, the St. Paddy's Day beat down there. Before that, he fought at Fight to Win. He's got three wins on here. But we'll have to ask him what the other two are, where he's fighting next. And that, see what we got for boxing coming up. They got the RIP Johnny Tapia thing up on the box, Rick.
Yeah, they got the rest of
these
Johnny Tapia.
What?
They got the rest of
these
Johnny Tapia already up?
Yeah, on top of Star Trek. On all the pages.
I remember watching Johnny Tapia when I was about 12 or 15 years old. He started breaking in back in the late 80s on ESPN 2. I remember him fighting when he had, I think, only maybe one tattoo, and that was of Jesus on his chest. And I remember when he first started, he was, I mean, if he was 45 now, and that was about maybe 23 years ago, he was only 22 years old. And at first they were calling him Johnny Cat Tapia. And he didn't like it. He goes, no, man, he goes, I'm a knockout puncher. He goes, you know, don't call me Cat. And then they were calling him the Babyface Assassin. And I remember he got suspended for a couple of years back in around 1990, you know, for cocaine use. And it was just a shame. He came back, you know, he won a world title. A couple of years later, he had a big grudge match with Danny Romero, and he schooled Romero. I mean, a lot of people were picking the younger guy, you know. You know, Romero obviously, you know, like Tapia was like the troubled one. Romero was like almost like the golden child, but Tapia schooled him, and you know, obviously he stayed in the limelight for, you know, the good part of the 2000s. And then it was like almost like, I remember hearing, it's like, he would always say he was most comfortable when he was training or in the ring. Because when he was not training and not in the ring, you know, he was confused. He was scared. You know, he had a lot of demons. I mean, his father, he never met him, was died before he was born. His mother was raped and stabbed 26 times with a screwdriver when he was 8 years old. You know, he was raised by his grandparents. So that's why he kind of took the moniker, My Vida Loca, My Crazy Life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a whirlwind. Basically, the guy was declared clinically dead 4 times. To the point where they were going to pull the plug on him, and he came back. And I remember emailing Iceman John Scully. I found out about it Saturday night. I was coming home from the movies, and I got home from the movies, and I stopped at a Wawa, and I checked my Facebook on my phone, and I saw John Scully. I got a notification from him. You know, Johnny Cappy, you're dead at 45. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. So when I got home, I had responded, and, you know, I said it was almost like he was a cat. And he finally lost his ninth life.
Yes. Fifth life. He went out on the fifth. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a crazy life. I mean, if you put that in a novel, people would just be like, yeah, whatever, I don't believe that. That couldn't happen. Definitely. But, you know, he was supposedly straight, you know, doing good. Although we're hearing trickles coming out that he may have been doing drugs that day. His wife actually was the one that supposedly set him on the straight and narrow for a little while, anyway. And she had to lock him in the hotel room or something, I think, for a week to get him off the drugs. And, he turned his life around for a little while, anyway. But, you know, only the good die young, they say.
you wasn't going to have long life.
Pretty much.
You know, the day was. And, what else can you say?
Big fight this weekend, Saturday on Showtime from Carson, California. We got Antonio Tarver, who's 29-6 with 20 knockouts, fighting Latif Gayoud, 18-0 with 14 knockouts for the IBO Cruiserweight title. And we got light middleweights Austin Trout, 24-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Delvin Rodriguez, who's 26-5-3 with 14 knockouts. And Ronald Winky Wright is back at middleweight. He's got a 51-5-1 record with 25 knockouts. He's fighting Peter Quillen, who's undefeated at 26-0, 22 knockouts. And then we got the vacant IBF bantamweight title on the line between Leo Santa Cruz, 19-0 with 1 draw and 11 knockouts. And he's fighting Vusi Malinga, who's 23-1. And that's 12 knockouts to his credit there. There's a couple other decent fights on here, too. We got Sharif Bogier, who's 22-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Manuel Leyva, 21-6 with 12 knockouts. And Sakio Bika, super middleweight, 29-5-2 with 20 knockouts, fighting Diet Davis, who's 21-2-1. Pretty decent card all around there.
Good fighter. You know, obviously he's in his 40s now. Not the spring chicken. But, you know, as you saw with Danny Green, he can really make things difficult.
Right.
He's really been looking impressive, but, you know, he's had a good.
All right, well, we're going to get Matt on the phone here in a minute. So we'll get back to the boxing schedule in a little bit. I know there's a couple good female fights overseas that are headliners or co-main events this week. But that's pretty much the big deal card in America until we find another one that beats it. We'll have to get to the Jesus fight of the week, of course. I'm sure there is one.
Oh, dear.
Alright.
Got a new computer. It's very exciting news. I got a new computer yesterday, and guess what I have?
Skype.
I have a web. Well, I signed up for Skype, but I don't know how to use it yet. But I have a webcam. I don't know how to use it.
Skype will actually ask you if you want to configure it and turn it on automatically, probably, if you get Skype. Anyway, let's get Matt on the phone. Matt Dan Arendt, 5-0.
Hello?
Hey, Matt.
Hey.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Good. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and we also got Tony the Tornado Pennacale on the line here. How's it going?
Okay. Hello, man.
Tell us what you got going on there at the... got any fights coming up?
Yeah, I'm going to be fighting on June 30th for Resurrection MMA. Resurrection Fighting Alliance. It's going to be their third show. Pretty big organization, you know, considering they've only done two shows besides this one coming up. But there's some big names on the card, and looking to get into their show and put on a great one.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it says here you train Black Dragon and Jackson's MMA.
Yeah, well, actually, it's just Black Dragon right now. And for a couple of my other fights, I was going down and doing my camps down at Jackson's, but this fight, I wasn't able to make it for this one.
Okay, cool. What's that been like with the two different camps?
It's good, you know, like, I got good training partners down here, and they're always able to help me out and get me prepared for my fight. I like going out of state and stuff to some of these bigger fight camps to get my mind totally on the fight, you know, make that sacrifice away from the family and stuff, just to test myself mentally and physically. I think it's good for the fighter, you know, to get into a big camp like that. And so that's basically why I do it. It's just to test me physically and mentally, to focus basically just on the fight itself.
Cool. And how did you first get into fighting?
I first got into fighting, it kind of found me. I ended up hearing about one of these trainers here in town that started training guys to compete in mixed martial arts events. So, you know, I heard about him, who is my master. I heard about him through one of my friends from work, and my friends from work knew that I was a boxer coming out. I started boxing when I was real young. So he was like, you know, you should come see this guy if you want to get into MMA. And, you know, he started to train fighters. And, you know, he turned out to be, you know, a really great coach and a really good friend of mine. So we've been pushing hard since then.
Cool. And do you have any fight nicknames or anything like that yet, or still working on that?
No, still working on that, I guess. You know... I'm not gonna make up a name for myself or anything like that, you know. It's, whatever.
All right. So you said you did some boxing. Was it amateur, pro, or?
Yeah, amateur boxing. I started boxing when I was 8 years old here at the local gym here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Under like the USA boxing rules, you know, the USA Olympic boxing rules. And, you know, started doing national tournaments when I turned a little bit older. But, yeah, I started boxing when I was 8, and, I stuck with it throughout my teenage years and everything. And then, you know, kind of stopped boxing for a while, just kind of got into living, like, the teenage lifestyle, you know, partying, drinking, and stuff like that. And then I ended up meeting my wife, and we had a daughter and a family. So I wanted to. I knew that fighting was always in me, and that competitive spirit. So I wanted to get into mixed martial arts, you know, to have something for my family, something that they could look at me as, you know, a bigger figure in life than just a, you know, regular old guy working a 9-to-5 job.
Cool. So you literally fight to put food on the table?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I don't get paid like the big bucks now or anything like that. You know, I was never really into fighting just to make money. I just love to fight, and, you know, if the money's there, then yeah, you know, why not take it? But that's not why I fight. You know, I just love to fight. It's just what I like to do. So.
Yeah, that's one thing you notice about a lot of MMA fighters. You know, it's not a career most people get into to make money. And, you know, you get better fighters because of that, because they really do love it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's why I wanted to get into mixed martial arts, just to become a mixed martial artist itself, you know, a martial arts fighter. It was never about the money. You know, I've had, you know, over 75 amateur boxing matches, almost 20 MMA amateur fights. You know, but then, you know, once I started getting better and started evolving as a fighter, you know, I figured why not, you know, try to make a little bit extra cash, you know, to put food on the table for my family, and, you know, it's worked out for me so far.
Awesome. And how has the boxing background helped out? I noticed watching a lot of MMA myself and being a boxer, that's how I met my co-host here. We actually were on different college boxing teams in the 1998 Nationals. In Kentucky.
And
I've always noticed watching MMA that most MMA fighters have really weak boxing. So it's got to help out for you. that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's kind of strange to me, too. You know, every fight starts, you know, standing on its feet. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of guys have just, like, looked into wanted to really work on their wrestling and jiu-jitsu. You know, because that's evolved so much since, you know, it first came into the States back in the 90s or whatever, and, you know, they really took to that. But, you know, every fight starts standing on its feet, and, you know, for me growing up and everything, you know, a fight was two guys, you know, punching each other, not trying to knock each other out, not taking one down and trying to choke them or just lay on them, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Fans love it, anyway, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
It's one of the things that we used to always talk about, because back in the early days of MMA, fans used to boo the fight when it went to the ground.
Yeah.
You know, now at least they're getting a little bit more accepting of the ground game and all that, but they still love to see the slugfests.
Right, for sure. That's what I like too, so.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite fighters out there, any role models in the sport?
You know, I look up to a lot of fighters, you know, nowadays, especially guys like in the UFC, you know, the family type guys. But, you know, when I first got into mixed martial arts, I really looked up to BJ Penn, you know, seeing how he was good at every aspect of fighting. I really enjoyed that, his tenacity and his all around great game, you know, as a mixed martial artist.
All right. And how about outside the sport? Do you have any role models that helped you out along the way?
You know, basically, you know, just my family, my coaches. You know, I've always looked up to them guys, you know, my coaches, they've also been in fighting for a long time, you know, not just as, you know, mixed martial arts fighters, but martial artists, period. They've been around, you know, the sport very long. And, you know, I've really looked up to that to see, you know, the type of success they've had just from martial arts. But, you know, my family is basically like my main, you know, inspiration. They've, you know, they're hard workers. They worked hard all their life to get where they're at and what they wanted in life. And so, you know, it's kind of shined down on me. Like, you know, that's exactly how I am. Hard worker, you know, I'm going to work hard to get what I want. And, you know, it's basically how it goes.
Cool. And how about your style? Do you have a favorite submission or punch or strike or anything?
You know, a lot of people have been asking me, you know, about my striking and stuff, you know, because I like to keep it standing on the feet. But, you know, my uppercut has really worked out for me. You know, I think I've got like 3 knockouts, you know, my pro career now. And my uppercuts really worked great for the ground. You know, it's whatever. You know, like early in my career, I was getting taken down a lot, so I'd work off my back. But now, you know, I find myself on top of guys more and working ground and pound. So, you know, I don't really have a favorite. Just, you know, whatever wins, whatever helps me win is what I like.
Right. What do you know about your opponent coming up on this next fight here?
What I know about my opponent, Aaron Eli, he's a, you know, Bellator vet, Shark Fight vet. Really, really tough guy. I think he had like a 12-0 amateur career with like all stoppages. 3-1 pro. He wrestled at a Division I college. You know, his stand-up's really sharp and technical. He's a very tough guy, and, you know, I got my hands full, so I'm training extra hard. I put in a lot of work, you know, have to after my last fight, I didn't take any breaks. I went right back into training and to prepare for him. And you know, I just know that he's a really good fighter. But you know, that's what I'm being prepared for, and that's what I want to fight. I want to fight the best guy. So.
And what would you say is the most important thing that you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing is it's just you know everything's really important, the sacrifice, the putting in work in the gym, you know, the dieting, it's all important. Basically, you know, it's all mentally is the most important thing. As long as you're mentally prepared and ready, you know, that you've put your hours in the gym and made your sacrifices. So, you know, mentally definitely I guess the key to the victory.
And what do you love most about MMA?
What I love most? So much to choose from, but I just love the fight itself. I love, you know, how two guys could basically, you know, work their hardest to be the best fighter that they can be. You know, come fight night, they're gonna put their heart and dedication and soul on the line against another guy that's doing the exact same thing. And, you know, to figure out who the better fighter is, you know, that's basically what it's all about. And, you know, that's what I do. I put my heart and soul into it during fight night. And that's probably, like, you know, my most favorite thing is, you know, the guys put in the dedication and hard work, and then they get to show it off for, you know, 15 minutes, if it even goes that far. But, yeah.
It always works out better when it doesn't, if you win, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And you're undefeated. Looks like Sure Dog's only get you 3-0, but your
right.
Our guy says you're 5-0. And we know
yeah,
that all the time. So.
yeah. We, I don't know if the promoters have never sent in my fights or whatever like that, but yeah, I'm not too worried about it. It's, you know, records are records, and you know, all that matters is when you come to fight that night, you know.
Right.
One thing you were just saying, you know, the one thing you love about the sport, and I'll basically I was going to elaborate, you know, a brief point on it, is, I mean, you go out there, you train your hardest, you go out there and do your best against another competitor who got it in the exact same thing. And the one thing, I mean, I always say that I loved about it when I box and when I train guys now is, you know, you're going out there and, you know, you're going to, you know, do your best to defeat your opponent. But on the same line, you know, you're doing it within the realm of a sport. I mean, I have a lot of young kids that I talk to. I trained in an inner city gym. I, for years, you know, always wanted to prove myself. Until I started boxing, and it was like, you know what, some of the shit that I did when I was 16, 17 years old, if I could go back now, I'd probably slap the living shit out of myself. Because, you know, you don't think about, you know, the consequences. Yeah, okay, hey, I was lucky that nothing happened. But, you know, you had kids out there, you know, carrying guns, carrying knives. I mean, I was always the type of guy that if I had a problem with somebody, I would have said, you know what, okay, me and you, one-on-one, no weapons. Me and you, mano-a-mano, let's go. But a lot of guys don't have that mentality. They have more of the gang mentality where it's like, you know, if you beat me up, I'm going to get you back, you know, cheap. And I know a couple guys, a bunch of them got arrested a year or so after I had some problems with them. And what they did, I was a freshman in college. They had some problems with a kid from another neighborhood. Actually, they had some problems with a bunch of kids in another neighborhood, and they showed up one night, all wielding bats and hockey sticks and clubs, and, you know, they just isolated one kid that wasn't even involved, you know, with any of the problems they were having. He was an altar boy, he was a good kid, you know, but he was in the wrong place, wrong time, And they caught him, and they ended up holding him up and bludgeoning him with a baseball bat, and he died. He was 17 or 18 years old, about the same age I was. And I'm thinking, man, that could have, probably should have been me. And that really gets you thinking. And I got some young kids that I'm training now. One kid that I'm training, he is more a little bit focused. You know, I don't get to work with him as much because he's going into a career right out of high school. He's already working, and he knows what he wants to do. You know, he knows he's not going to college, but he's already got, you know, a trade set up, and he's already working as an apprentice. So I don't see him much, but he's a kid that's pretty focused. I'm not too worried about him. The other kid, you know, he's a good kid, and I talk to him, and he relates to me, and I talk to him not always as a coach to a student, but almost as like, you know, I can respect who you are, and I try to be his friend. Now, if I'm taking him into a fight, and then I'm going to be a little trickier on him. But right now, he's just training, you know, to get off the street, to have some fun, to learn about a sport that he is really getting interested in. So, yeah, I'll joke around with him, and we'll be friends, and I'll tell him stories, and I'll tell him how, you know, I started out and some of my experiences. But it's good for him when he comes over because, like, he failed a grade and his twin brother is ahead of him. So that's a part of his inferiority problem. You know, he doesn't have a driver's license yet and he's over 18 years old. And he's not great in school. He's not sure if he can make it into college. He wants to have something to identify himself. And I see him on his Facebook page now. He puts pictures of gloves up and everything. I'm like, you know what? I'm having a positive influence on this kid's life. Because when he comes over to my house, you know, when he talks to me, he's always very respectful. He listens. He asks questions. And I work him hard. I work him really hard. So when he leaves, I know he's not going to go out and get into trouble. He's going to go home. He's going to put the mics on his shoulders. And hopefully he's going to study.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, most people that end up in fighting or even dabble in it, you know, it saved them from something worse. You know, when you have that risk-taking mentality inside you, I think that it has to have an outlet. And if you don't use a sport, then you get in trouble. My MMA moment came a few years ago when I was partying, my party years, my 20s. And I went to this place, they call it Manch Vegas. It's Manchester, New Hampshire. It was this big party in a house. They had a keg in the kitchen and all kinds of people there. And I decided, this was my second week in a row at this house, I decided this week to bring my boxing gloves. So, well, everybody else was boxing. I didn't even go out there because I didn't really want to, you know, be a show-off or anything. So my buddy and I got so drunk, I said to him, why don't I just box you one-handed? So we started boxing one-handed in front of the crowd. Everybody's laughing. One of the kids who owned the house I knew boxed. He comes out and he goes, let's go two-on-one. And he had two gloves on. And he just threw a punch at me out of nowhere without me being ready. So I just hauled off and hit him with my bare right hand. And, of course, that started a near riot. And everybody's rolling around on the ground. And one of my lightest buddies, must have been 90 pounds soaking wet, he chicken-winged the guy and dropped this big guy who's like 7 feet tall. He's the biggest guy at the party, big bald-headed dude. And he just kind of flopped him right in front of me like a dead tuna. His nose was sticking out. He had this giant nose, and I had still the one glove on my left hand, my jab hand. And I came down with the three hardest punches I've ever thrown in my life, and the kid's nose literally like blew up right in front of me, got all over my shirt and everything. And then all I remember is this girl dragging me off the pile. And she's like, you got to get the fuck out of here. Throws me in the kitchen. And in the kitchen, they had a trap waiting. The kid was outside in front of the door. And as soon as they threw me through the door, the kid sucker punched me in the face. And that's the only punch I took in the whole melee. And the worst part was all the big kids that I had come with had gone on a beer run. So the only kids left with me were the tiniest kids in my group. Like, they were all literally like 90, 100 pounds. And we fought our way out of there. They were all busted up. The kid that I hit had to go in the hospital in an ambulance with a broken nose. So it kind of scares you when you get situations like that. I mean, thank God nobody pulled a knife or anything like that, but it's still one of those moments I love to tell the story because it's like, you know, it's nothing better than winning a fight like that. And getting out with limited damage, too. That's important. But I'd rather be paid for it than it be a sport.
Yeah.
But getting back to you, what's your ultimate goal in MMA?
The ultimate goal is, you know, to be able to do it full-time, you know, make a living out of it. Hopefully, you know, inspire kids and young adults, you know, along the way to just, you know, let them know, you know, if you believe in yourself and believe in your dreams that you can achieve your goals, you know, because that's what I have done so far. And, you know, ultimately, you know, be able to, you know, raise my family off of, you know, off of fighting to make money, to, you know, to be the best fighter that I could be and to, you know, just to be able to take care of my family, you know, through mixed martial arts is the ultimate goal.
Cool. And what's it like out there in Cheyenne? Is it pretty good mixed martial arts community in your area, or is it tough to get fights? What's it like out there?
In Wyoming, they actually just passed the law to where we're actually going to have a commission now in Wyoming. So, you know, the fights are going to be sanctioned now. It's not going to be, you know, a bunch of just, you know, little smokers or whatever on Thursday night or something like that at a bar, you know. So they're all going to be sanctioned fights. The training here, you know, Cheyenne, where I'm in the capital of Wyoming, you know, I got a good gym, a lot of good training partners that I train with. A lot of my fights, you know, I've done, like, for my amateur career has been in Colorado, which isn't too far from my home. You know,
it's good. The Air Force Academy in Colorado, and there was a big mountain within seeing distance from the campus. They called it Cheyenne Mountain.
Yeah.
NORAD.
Nice. Cool.
Colorado is a very familiar place. Nice place. A lot of mountains.
Yeah, and definitely Colorado, you know, has a huge fight scene. There's probably about like 50 gyms, you know, in Colorado. A lot of top paid gyms too. And you know, in Wyoming, it's just getting bigger. You know, like I said, how they passed the law to get a commission here to get the fights are going to be sanctioned. You know, so it's just getting bigger. I got a lot of love from my hometown. You know, everyone here supports me and. You know, I'm proud to represent, you know, Cheyenne, so it's good.
Cool. And is there anybody out there you really want to fight at this stage? Or are you pretty much whatever you get, whoever comes your way?
Yeah, whoever comes my way, I'll be more than happy to fight them. You know, if there's guys out there that wants to fight me, you know, I'm not going to back down. You know, I don't have you know, I don't need to call anybody out, you know. I'll leave that up to the matchmakers and stuff. And, you know, I'll be more than happy to fight anybody, you know, who wants to fight me. So, yeah.
Cool. Anybody you want to give a shout-out to out there or thank or anything like that?
Definitely. I just got back from California. I went and did a little bit of training up there at, you know, Black House and the Verdun Combat Team. A shout out to them, Verdun Combat Team, Black House. Also to my gym, Black Dragon MMA, the Farm Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, my management team, Phenom Management, Ricky Vasquez. Also my sponsors, Inked Out Apparel, DCJ Combat Sports, Smart Sports, Laramie County Chiropractic, Ruby Juice, and you know, I'm sorry if I forgot anybody, but you know, definitely shout out to my town, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and I hope to make everyone proud on June 30th.
Cool. Thanks
for having me.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Yeah.
How do people find you online? You got a Twitter or MySpace or anything like that? I know MySpace is kind of old.
Right. No, I never got into the MySpace good thing, but, like, you could, I'm on Facebook, Matt Manzanares, friend me. Also on Twitter at Manzanares, MMA. You go to my management page, Phenom Management. They got a lot of stuff about, a lot of up-and-coming fighters, really good fighters. So, hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. So.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. And I don't think you're going to need it, but good luck in the fight.
Hey, I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you guys very much.
You are. Have a good night.
All right. You too.
Good night.
So there you go. There's Matt and fighting on June 30th against Aaron Eli. Yes. And if you're in the Wyoming area. I guess it doesn't really say where it is, but we'll probably have more about it as the event gets closer. I'm sure Ricky will send us something on that. And we've got an interview coming up at 9:15 with Lyle Beerbaum, and he's another MMA fighter. But before we get to that, we're going to finish covering the boxing schedule here. Got a couple other good fights worth mentioning, and I got to quickly address the UFC card we haven't even talked about. It's one of those ones I didn't get to watch all of this weekend, but we got a lot to talk about UFC wise because they just had the UFC, the final episode of The Ultimate Fighter, and now they're going to have the finale this Friday. We've got to run those schedules down, and we'll get to that as soon as we get through this. So, be patient. Over in Denmark on Saturday, there's a big female fight, 10-rounder welterweight fight between Cecilia Brækhus, 19-0 with 5 knockouts, and Jessica Balogun, 22-1 with 10 knockouts. That's for 3 different titles. The WBA, WBC, and WBO welterweight titles there for the females. Also in that card, we got Mads Larsen, who was 51-3 with 38 knockouts at super middleweight, fighting Luke Blackledge, who's 9-0. That's a good fight. Let's see what else we got here. And we got a pretty interesting card down here in Mexico on Saturday. Juan Jose Montez fighting for the World Boxing Federation Super Flyweight title. His record is 22-2 with 14 knockouts. He's fighting Victor Zalita, who's 20-2 with 10 knockouts. There's another female fight on that card between Irma Sanchez, who's 22-5-1 with 7 knockouts, and Ibeth Zamora Silva, who's 15-4. That's for the World Boxing Federation female flyweight title. And we talked about the big event down there in California. It's a big time title fight over in Poland on Saturday. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name, but he's undefeated at 25-0. Andrzej Wawrzyk. He's fighting Denis Bakhtov, who's 35-7 with 24 knockouts at heavyweight. And it's for the WBA International Heavyweight title and the vacant WBC CIS and Slovenian Boxing Bureau heavyweight title. It's a new one. I've not heard of that one. And we have on the undercard Arthur Szpilka, also a heavyweight. 10-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Gonzalo Omar Basile, who's 54-6 with 25 knockouts. might have to skip the Jesus fight of the week. I don't think we have one in front of me. We have talked about the Tarver. All right, we got another one over at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. The joint, Bebu Chumanov, who's 12-1 with 8 knockouts, fighting Enrique Ornelas, 33-7 with 21 knockouts. Not much really big on the rest of the card there. See what else we got. We got Michael Oliveira fighting Axelino Freitas in Uruguay. Middleweight fight. It's a pretty good fight. Oliveira is 17-0, 12 knockouts. Freitas is 38-2 with 32 knockouts. It's on Saturday. You're going to go to that show, right, Tony?
I'm going to get my first ticket.
Make a special trip to Uruguay. All right, that does it for boxing. Let's get to the MMA schedule here. We got Ellenberger versus Kampman. They're calling the finale show for the Ultimate Fighter. We just had UFC 146, gotta run that down. And it's Mike Chiesa versus Al Iaquinta. And if you went back about 6 or 7 shows of ours, I don't know, probably more than that, but when they first started the show, we had a guest on who said he trained with Mike Chiesa. And I said at that time, the guy looks like he could win the whole show. And he's gotten that far. He's had a few rough goes of it. Last week and the week before, he had some punishing shots to the gut that he took and came back from. And this week was no exception. He's actually got some pretty decent boxing, but once he gets pushed to a certain limit, he seems to try to go back to the ground or, go back to his jiu-jitsu. He's a tall, lanky guy, so he's got the long reach. He would probably be a really good boxer if he had more experience in it, but it just seems like that's his major weakness, and he seems to always get caught with a punch. And the last couple of weeks, he really had a tough time recovering, but he ended up doing it. And Al is a much smaller guy. He's probably one of the more stocky, short guys that have been on this season. And he's going to be fighting Chiesa tomorrow night on FX. And it's been a long season. It seems like, this live idea. This was a good idea in some ways, but a bad idea in others, because we had a guy on not too long ago from New England, I guess he's living in Maine now, who was on the Ultimate Fighter show, and he talked about the scheduling. You get injured, and you get a fight a week later. And the schedule, the shooting, when they did it, they didn't even do it live. They weren't fighting every week. Now they're fighting every week because they have to. It's live. The fight is live every week. And the last guys to get through and to be in the final, I think they're very lucky not to have serious injuries going into this third fight in a row now, third week in a row. And at least before, when they came around to the final, it was months after the taping sometimes because of the production factor and everything. But now they're doing it live, and these guys have to fight on a major event, a major card with a bunch of other fighters, their UFC debut basically, and it's for real. The other fights are exhibitions. They don't go on the records. And it's, they've gone through this crazy schedule of fights. And even when we were in college, did we fight once a week, every week, for 3 weeks in a row? I didn't. I don't know. It's tough.
Try to give you like a week or so off here and there, but you're fighting a lot. Trump's meeting here. He said I was, you know, kind of banged up a little bit. Because I was fighting, and I remember.
Got speed up a little.
It's quite a different weight that I had from the 70s. I was studying on Monday down at the Richmond Athletic Club. That's called Willie Taylor. We fought on Monday, and then the following Monday, I was just up to the New York Athletic Center to play up there against Chris Jones in Air Force. The Friday night, we were going to go to New York on Sunday. So I fought Monday in Richmond. You know, we came home Monday night, went to class on Tuesday. I'm training there during the week, figuring out I'm going to play Monday night again in New York. And Friday, he goes, hey, the tennis are coming up to Mansfield for the show on Saturday, aren't they? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I'm going to put you on the card. I'm like, gosh. I'm like, I'm going to play Saturday night and then jump. And a fight that really didn't mean anything. And then we're going to go and we're going to go up to New York on Sunday and like, Monday? He's like, yeah, yeah, it'll be good for you. I don't think there's anybody else doing that. don't worry about it. The fight on Saturday was mainly just supposed to be like, not an exhibition. Well, that's, I went out there, and I really took it seriously. The guy I was fighting was very serious. Like, and I ended up having a hell of a hard time. You know, I knocked on my ass, I had to get off of him. I eventually, I was on the card, but not easy. And then, doctor-in-law worried, oh, man, I don't know if you can play up in New York. You were in a hell of a fight. I'm like, yeah, a fight that I shouldn't have been in. You know, my dad was picked off. I was picked off, obviously. But it was a meaningless. And then I went up and I fought on Monday.
Right.
And then I remember when I played my junior year, I fought, I think it was 5 consecutive weeks at one point. I fought up in New York on Saturday night. And then the next Saturday, I fought at Penn State, and that's why I got busted up in the middle of the mouth. I was fighting heavyweight. The next week, I wasn't supposed to fight the next week, so I think it was probably from, being, roughed up against a little bit bigger of a fighter. And the one kid on the team, but, oh, gosh, is my knees really bothering me? And he goes, we'll just put Penn State on your place. I'm like, the guy is pitching bad as me, and I'm the one coming off major knee surgery? Talk about a little bit of slap in the face.
Yeah.
So that pissed me off a little bit. Okay, fine. So I fight there. Then next week I fight at Lock Haven. I'm going to fight again the following week. And my opponent ended up having a flu. That was the only thing that got me off. Well, I would have fought 7 consecutive weeks.
So you've been there. It's not. Yeah. And, even in the amateurs, it's not easy.
Well, I still see Coach Troop every year, and he always talks to you, and he's all like, you're always one of my favorites. He goes, it didn't matter who or where. It was like, let's go. didn't matter who, where it was or who we wanted you to fight. It was like, okay, or what weight. I said, yeah, but, I did get over that in a while.
Yeah. Well, these guys, I mean, there's a lot on the line here. I mean, obviously, main events, and it's the only regular fight not involving one of these Ultimate Fighters, I think. That's one of the only ones. I think there's maybe one or two more. But just about every guy on the show, I think there's only 2 guys on the show who had actual, serious injuries that resulted in suspensions by the Athletic Commission. Those are the only 2 that are not going to be on this card. Some of these guys maybe fought for the last time 3 or 4 weeks ago, but a lot of them fought more recently. And they don't have training camps, and the guys that aren't, the 2 guys that are on the top level fighting for the contract are also going to get future fights in the UFC if they beat their opponents, and they're getting put against pretty tough guys. Justin Lawrence, he's only 3-0 officially as a pro, and he's fighting an MMA veteran, John Koffer, who's been around the UFC for a little while. Darren Cruikshank is 10-2, he's fighting Chris Tickle. and he's another tough guy. GUF, tough. And then we got Miles Jury, 9-0, fighting Chris Saunders, 9-2. Christian Marcello versus Sam Cecilia. Jeremy Larson versus Joe Proctor. And John Albert versus Eric Perez to round out the card there. The top three below the main event, we got Mike Chiesa and Ally Aquinta. Chiesa is 7-0 as a pro, and Aquinta is 5-1-1. Jonathan Brookins, he's another Ultimate Fighter star, the show a couple of years ago, I think. He's 13-4, fighting Charles Oliveira, who's 15-2. And then you got Max Holloway, 4-1, fighting Pat Schilling there. Main event is Jake Ellenberger versus Martin Campman, and that should really be a great fight. Both those guys are just amazing fighters, and they should be in title contention. I know one of the better fights I saw out of Ellenberger was against Sean Sherk. And Sean Sherk's coming back, actually. He's been around for a while, but Ellenberger fought Sherk a while ago. Just had a hell of a fight. Thought he fought Sean Sherk. I don't see it on his record here. Maybe I'm mistaken. It would be on here if he fought him. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. I don't know. But, yeah, he last fought Diego Sanchez on UFC on Fuel TV and won a unanimous decision. And before that, he beat Jake Shields. Yeah, I definitely didn't. Must be thinking about somebody else. I don't see Sean Sherk on his record. That's weird, because I swear I remember him having a tough fight with him. But anyway, Ellenberger is 27-5, and Campman is 19-5. And then we had last weekend, Junior Dos Santos versus Frank Mir in the main event. You talk about superior boxing. Junior Dos Santos is definitely ahead of the curve with his boxing. Did a really great job picking Frank Mir apart. And, you know, it's kind of one of those fights that proves that MMA math doesn't work. You know, because Roy Nelson, Junior Dos Santos took three rounds. Roy Nelson took Roy Nelson the distance in their fight before he was champion. And, you know, Frank Mir made mincemeat basically out of Roy Nelson. So, Frank Mir didn't even last two rounds against Dos Santos. It shows you how much he can improve in a little bit of time. And he just got clocked out by a few too many punches, and that was it. Or being stopped in the second at 3:04. This is one of the bigger bloodbaths I have ever seen in the UFC live. I know there was a worse one with Joe Daddy Stevenson. That kind of really bad. There's pictures of it everywhere, how bloody he was. But in the co-main event, we had Cain Velasquez coming back to form with a knockout in the first round, technical knockout over Antonio Silva. And Silva got cut open on the nose, I think. And he's a big dude. You know, they call him Bigfoot, but he's got a big head, too. And he obviously has a lot of blood. There was like a pool of blood almost obscuring the old Bud Light logo on the mat. It was bad. And they stopped it at one point and, you know, checked to see if he could see. And he asked the ref, the doctor, to wipe his eyes one more time before he went back into the fight, then it just went back to the same way. So it was mercifully stopped at 3:36 in the round. And speaking of Roy Nelson, he beat Dave Herman by one punch knockout there. The first round, 51 seconds mark, 51 seconds in, I think. It was just a super punch. And like I said, he jumped up on the mat, on the top of the ring cage, and gave Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta a nice little message. Then one of the only decisions of the night was Darren Elkins versus Diego Brandão. Darren Elkins won by unanimous decision. He had Stefan Struve beat LaVar Johnson by a very weird armbar. I've never seen an armbar do that much damage that quickly in that position, but I guess they were calling it a Russian armbar or something. I don't know. But that's how Stefan Struve won his fight there. He's been kind of up and down. He's a tall dude. You'd think he'd be dominant, but he's had a rough go of it. He's had a few wins here and a few losses there. And then, you know, always ends up in the big fights, and somehow every now and then he pulls one off. But we also had Stipe Miocic had a win over Shane Del Rosario by elbow in the second round, TKO. And then we had Jamie Varner beat Edson Barboza by TKO in the first round. CB Dalloway, as we talked about earlier, beat Jason Miller by unanimous decision. I think I said split decision back then, but it was unanimous. Dan Hardy got back in the winning circle. Four fights in a row he lost, and he won with a punch and some elbows in the first round. I mean, no doubt about it, over Dwayne Ludwig, who's a real tough guy. Comes from the WBC circuit there, and he's been around the Ring of Fire circuit there down in Colorado, where our previous guest there likes to fight. We also had Paul Sass beat Jacob Volkman by triangle armbar submission. Glover Teixeira beat Kyle Kingsbury by submission. And one of the only other decisions on the card, we had Mike Brown beat Daniel Pineda by unanimous decision. So Mike Brown, the Norwich graduate, back in the winning circle. Good to see. He's had a couple rough losses in his last few fights. He lost to Ronnie Yaya and Diego Nunes last year. And came back with a win against Nam Phan at UFC 133 in August of last year. And so this is his second win in a row. Also good to see. And we have to get Lyle Beerbohm on the line in a minute here. So we're going to connect with him. We're looking to get Kendall Grove and Carl Parisian. We're going to be on the June 16th show fight card. That's on June 16th, so... Is it June 16th? Yeah, June 16th. So we have a show on the 14th. Might get them both on then. But Lyle was available, so we're going to give him a ring shortly here. What are the Phillies doing these days? Can't hear you. Say it again.
Just won 2 out of 3 against the Mets, but they lost Roy Halladay for 2 months.
Oh, no.
It's not a good thing. I'm going to the game on Saturday, and he doesn't fit. So I'm mostly trying to get all this new computer downloaded, too. You know, it's a fancy thing, Rich.
Yeah.
It's got a touch screen with big screen on it, but I got to get my printer installed. I got to get all my TV stuff reinstalled.
Cool. Yeah, you need all that touch screen fancy stuff these days.
Yeah. Okay.
I need a new computer. Buy it.
Hello?
Hello, Lyle.
Hi, it's him.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron here with Fight News Unlimited. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line.
Oh, good.
How's it going?
I'm doing good, just watching my son play some baseball.
Oh, cool. We were just talking about the Phillies. I'm watching the Red Sox lose.
Uh-huh. They're playing the Red Sox Little League, so I think the Red Sox are winning this game.
Oh, at least they're winning somewhere. So what do you got coming up for fights? Anything good?
Yeah, I'm fighting June 16th versus Marcus Aurelio for a show fight MMA down in Missouri. So should be a pretty good fight. A lot of good guys on the card. Drew Fickett's on the card. Carl Parisian, John Gunderson, a bunch of good guys. So it should be a pretty fun card.
Awesome. And what do you know about the show fight circuit?
You know, I don't know a whole lot about them, to tell you the truth. My manager got me the fight, and I don't know a whole lot about their promotions.
Okay, cool. What got you into fighting in the first place?
Well, when I was sitting in prison, and I was watching the Ultimate Fighter show on the Prom TV, and that's the reality TV show, The Ultimate Fighter, and I was like, are you kidding me? These guys are sitting there fighting, making money. And I didn't know nothing about MMA at this point, you know, and so I was just watching, and that's what got me into it. And I got out. The day I got out, I went by an MMA gym, and I stopped and went and rolled with the guy, told him I want to be a professional fighter, and he threw me a gi, and I started grappling, and 8 days later, I had my first cage fight, so it was pretty interesting.
That's fast tracking.
I mean, it's been any time, right?
What's that?
I've been wasting any time, right?
I'm sorry, you're muffling. I can't hear that. I can't hear the second voice.
I said you weren't wasting any time.
Oh, yeah, nope. I knew what I wanted, that's for sure. I traded one addiction for that, my meth addiction for my MMA addiction, you know, and I really knew what I wanted to do, and I haven't turned, and five years later, here we sit, talking with you guys and fighting, you know, and hopefully I'll be in the UFC here, you know, after Marcus Aurelio. That's my goal, so.
Yeah, a lot of big-time UFC vets on this card.
Yeah, there is.
You'd think that the big bosses over there be watching to see who they want to bring back.
Nope, that's the plan, so.
Awesome. And who would you say is the toughest guy you ever fought so far?
Oh, I would, you know, Aoki is the best submission guy. He caught me pretty quick. And then Pat Healy, he's, you know, both of those guys in the rankings are top 10 in the world, you know, Pat Healy and Aoki, so. Both, you know, those are my two losses, and I'd have to say those are probably the toughest guys, you know. Mm-hmm. Vitor Ribeiro was pretty tough. He was a good grappler and whatnot, and so my strength is my grappling, and so to be able to go to the ground and to be able to do that with Vitor, I was pretty happy with myself for that fight.
All right. And what was it like working under the Strikeforce label there for a little while?
It was good. I got some good fights and then whatnot. I had a kind of a bummy contract because with the Elite XC, but you know, I got out of that, and I'm happy to be out. You know, I'm ready to be in this. I'm ready to be in the UFC. That's my goal. You know, that's my only goal now. And so, but it was good. Strikeforce was good.
Well, it seems like it's almost better to be outside of Strikeforce than inside if you want to get a UFC contract these days. They only took a few of the guys from Strikeforce and brought them over.
And yeah, sure.
It seems like if you have a contract, they want to wait till that ends before they take guys out of there, at least. You know?
Yeah, no, I talked with Joe Silva, my manager talked with Joe Silva, and he said I'd rattle off a few wins, and we'll see what we can do. So, you know, that's my goal.
Awesome. And do you have a favorite style or submission or anything, or punch or strike?
You know, I like to ground and pound. I like to use my elbows on the ground, and you know, I like it all. I like the scrambling. You know, if anything, it would be my scrambling just to get on top. You know, I might get taken down. But I'll end up on top. So that's the goal.
Right. And what do you know about your opponent here, Marcus?
You know, he's tough. He's had 9 losses, but all of his losses are decisions, and he's fought, you know, you name it, he's fought them. You know, he's had a ton of tough fights, And it should be a pretty, and his ground, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, so his ground game is really good, and so it should be a pretty interesting fight.
Cool. And do you have anybody out there that you watch a lot, try to emulate, try to pick up stuff from, favorite fighters, anything?
I just, you know, my training partners that have been with me since day one, like Cody McKenzie, Mike Hank, Sam Cecilia, that's on Tough, Mike Chiesa, that's fighting in the finale in Tough here tomorrow. You know, those are the guys I pay attention to. He's my training partners.
Cool. Yeah, Mike, I thought would surprise a lot of people. He's had a rough couple fights, his last two fights, but he pulled it off.
Yeah, no, he's definitely very good. You know, he's really good on the ground. He has a lot of heart, and he's very tough.
Do you have any role models outside the sport that helped you along?
Oh, you know, my mom and dad, you know, like, and my, you know, all my family. Those are, you know, and my kids have really, I've really bonded with my kids, and I got a fiance named Josie, and she's really kept me out of trouble. That and MMA has really got my head on my shoulders, and I'm doing really good now, so.
And what do you enjoy most about the fight game?
I like, you know, you got to get paid. That's what I enjoyed most is when I get a paycheck and I get to be able to take it. You know, I get to take it home to my kids, you know. So
it's getting paid to do what you love.
Yeah.
Is there anybody out there you really would love to fight next or at some point in your career?
Oh, whoever. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to get out there and fight, show everybody what I can do, you know. You know, I had a couple losses to Pat Healy and back-to-back losses, but I'm ready to get back on that win streak. You know, I've had two fights since then, and I've won both of them, and this will be my third fight coming in, so I'm ready to go.
And is there anybody out there that you really consider? I'm trying to come up with here. After this, are you staying with the circuit, or do you have any idea what happens here after this fight?
Well, you know, like I said, I want to be in the UFC. That's my goal. And after this fight, you know, I have a good chance, especially if I go in and finish it and do good, I think I have a good chance of being in the UFC. So that's my goal.
All right. And is there anybody out there you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to or anything?
You know, just my sponsors, Mark Gatlin, Tax It Easy, Matt Dawson from Iron Master, and just all my friends and family and all my fans, you know. And you can hit me up on Twitter, Fancy Pants File, it's a Twitter, and you can hit me on Facebook too. And so.
All right. Well, we definitely appreciate talking to you tonight, and look forward to seeing you in the big octagon someday.
All right. Yeah, sounds good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Appreciate it, and good luck to your son.
All right, bye.
Bye. There you go. There's Lyle. Beer Bomb. We got a big fight coming up on June 16th, and there's definitely a lot of tough guys on that card. Show Fight 20. Kara Parisian and Kendall Grove, like I said earlier. We also have, let's see, who else? We got Matt Gunderson. Who else? Terry Martin. Marcus Aurelio, like he said, Shoni Carter, Drew Fickett, Charles Crazy Horse Bennett from Strikeforce fame, Aaron Rosa, Matt Lucas, and you know, a lot of big time MMA veterans on that card. So that should be a good show down there in Missouri. I think we're gonna sign off early. It's about a little past 9:30 here, so. Then we got about a half an hour left. We really ran out of stories to cover here and guests. So I think he sounded like he wanted to get off the phone and enjoy the game. So we let him go early. But we'll talk next week about the big UFC on Tough Live finale, the Ultimate Fighter finale, and of course the big Antonio Tarver match and all that stuff. And we'll see you then. We got to thank our sponsors, of course. Probably should have said that earlier in the show, but we can't forget millifidel.com, millifidel.com, drinkcocaine.com, our energy drink sponsor there. Forget to visit them and check out ZionsShop.com, our buddies over there. Not affiliated with the big company. He's got his own thing going, but he does do some orders with them. That's about it. But anyway, hit him up. Get some good stuff there. It's cheap. And until next week, that's all we get. Adios. Have a good night. Thanks for stopping by.